Flashback Twin Cities on KLDB Club 1220. Tom Osmond here for the next hour, along with our good friend and executive producer of All Things Technical, Tom Hsu.
Why, thank you very much.
It's been another week. We're here. We had that great interview with Ron Majors last week, and we're just talking before air. The banter we had off air might have been actually funnier than the air banter we had on air.
Well, on air, it actually was really serious.
It was serious.
Pretty provocative conversation.
Intellectual.
But, you know, it really can't compete to the the conversation.
And if
prior.
You didn't listen last week, we had Ron Majors, who was the anchor at KSDP-TV and now at WLS-TV in Chicago. But we had a clip, that aired in 1979, and Ron Majors was a bit disgusted by a piece of audio that, or a TV program that ABC had aired called Playboy's Roller Disco Pajama Party. And being the good researchers that we are here, we decided to watch part of the show before we actually brought Ron in. I thought, and rightfully so, it would be very disrespectful to play any of that audio with Ron Majors on, but we did have to do our research. And it is a timepiece. I do encourage you to go to YouTube, and it's not too scandalous. It's more or less ridiculous this actually ever aired on TV.
It just looks like they're having a fun time, and they're not doing anything terrible or atrocious.
You know, maybe when we play this next audio, you can pull a clip of that on, because I just think this is too good to not share with the listening audience here at KLBB.
And not to mention the fact that it was searched on, you know, I was the one that searched for it on my computer at work. So hopefully no one goes back through the logs and sees, Tom, why were you looking at the Playboy pajama roller disco party?
I think when you have the word roller disco pajama, it actually neutralizes any part of the word Playboy in your search engine. So if you're at work right now, I don't encourage you to search this. So just listen to the audio. It'll be funny. So how about your Minnesota Twins? Are you big week this week? They've managed to do everything we expected them to do, lose. And
oh, you are a Minnesotan.
Yes, and we had our good friend Jack Stallman on with the not Minnesota's greatest wins, but Minnesota's greatest
losses.
Right. This week in 1985, this would be August 8th, 1985, Major League Baseball strike. They weren't making enough again. The 1985 Major League Baseball strike was the fifth work stoppage in Major League Baseball since 1972 Major League Baseball strike. The strike ran 2 days. August 6th and 7th. The 25 games were scheduled for those days were all made up later in the season. So that year, you got to see your Twins lose later in the season if you missed them those 2 days.
Are you a major Twins fan, by the way?
Oh, no doubt.
Because you do actually have, like, the Homer hanky and all that stuff.
Yes. The Twins flag on my car, you know, up by my Vikings bumper sticker. Oh, that's right. This is the Green Bay Packers station. We shouldn't be talking about that.
I think they'll get over it.
Should we listen to what the news sounded like the day the Twins got to go back to work on August 8th, 1985?
Topping the local news this Thursday night, a dramatic rescue at Eden Prairie after a giant earth mover rolls over a car. And a new survey in Minneapolis could derail efforts to build the Super Mall in Bloomington.
There are now two number one draft choices signed in training with the Vikings in Mankato. And there's baseball at the Metrodome tonight, the mini-strike a mere blink in the eye of history.
I'm Bob Bruce, live at the Metrodome. I'll lead off our team coverage of the Twins game tonight.
I'm Cindy Brocato, along with Stan Turner. We'll have those stories and more next on the Eyewitness News Update.
Now, from Minnesota's leading news station, Cindy Brocato, Stan Turner, Dennis Belkin, and Bob Bruce. This is the Eyewitness News Update.
Well, this is what we've waited for. The Twins are on the rise once more. They've been moving up since Miller got the call. New names join the old. Another team unfolds. They're right at home in the Metrodome. So let's play ball and talk baseball. Viola and the G-Man Twins, baseball. Kent Herbeck, he's a key man. Hatcher, Tim, and Butcher coming through. There's Smithson and Bruno Puckett, too. Just like Tony, the killer and Carew.
Makes you want to sing along, doesn't it? Good evening, everyone. They are indeed playing baseball at the Metrodome tonight. Antonio Oliva, the killer Killebrew, and Rod Carew were all there to take part.
That's because it's the Twins versus the Angels on the first day after the mini-strike. And sportscaster Bob Bruce leads our team coverage at the Dome tonight. Good evening,
Bob.
Well, I'll tell you, apparently the two-day strike didn't sour the Twins fans on the national pastime. Over 31,000 here at the Metrodome tonight. And what a great way to restart the season. Tremendous game. You know, for the Twins against the Angels, the Angels lead the division. Every game is absolutely crucial, and they win it tonight by a score of 4-2, a big win for the Twins. Before tonight's game, though, a special ceremony honoring the newest member of the 3,000 hit club, Rod Carew. Of course, he had many of those base hits right here in Minnesota.
Well, you get the point.
The shortest strike in history. You could have even missed it on the news.
Not that night. It was the top story. They actually do the fan interviews, and pro or con players or owners, and the kids all were for the players, and all the adults who bought those 31,000 tickets were all for the owners. The 1994 baseball strike was 244 days, so that's the one everyone remembers, but 1985, the two-day Major League Baseball strike. I want to take a serious turn here, and we are going to have some artists from the song Clothes. Do you recall the song Clothes, Tom?
Oh, yeah. I'm impressed by you. I mean, that was a fantastic song. It's one of those that just touches everyone who listens to it.
Well, I'm fortunate enough to know some of the guys that were on the track, and they have agreed to be in studio today to talk a little bit about the story, Zach's story, and really how the song went from from what Zach wrote to a YouTube sensation to an iTunes number one hit. So let's take a break, and we'll be back with Matt Vanelli and Sean O'Hay on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220.
I fell down, down, down into this dark and lonely hole. There was no one there to care about me anymore. And I needed a way to climb and grab a hold of the edge. You were sitting there holding a rope, and we'll go up, up, up.
That is the song Clouds by Zach Sobiech. At age 14, Sobiech was diagnosed with osteosarcoma, a bone cancer which mostly strikes children. CBS reported that during his treatment, he underwent 10 surgeries and 20 rounds of chemotherapy. He started writing music after his diagnosis and later formed the band A Firm Handshake with friends Samantha Sammy Brown and Reed Redman. In May 2012, his doctors informed him that he had up to a year to live. Sobiech recorded the song Clouds about his battle with cancer and released it as a YouTube video in December 2012. It went viral, surpassing 3 million views at the time of his death. A Firm Handshake's first album, Fix Me Up, was released digitally in early 2013. Sobiech died on May 20th, 2013, complications from osteosarcoma at his home in Lakeland, an eastern suburb of St. Paul, Minnesota, at age 18. His funeral was held at the Catholic Church of St. Michael, and he was later buried in St. Michael's Cemetery. The song Clouds, I do have with me, live here at Flashback Twin Cities, two of the musicians that played on this track, Matt Vanelli and Sean O'Hay. Welcome to Flashback Twin Cities, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks.
I heard about this, and full disclosure, I've known these two for a long time, and the one on my far right for 17 years. I got a text one morning, and the text from Matt here is, I have the number one song on iTunes, and Matt's been in a number of bands, and I thought, well, which song got picked up on iTunes that, because there's a number of bands that could be chosen from. And I didn't make the connection until later that day when I look at the various news sites and check the news feeds that this was the actual song that you had participated in. And you told me about this months prior, and then I found out, I put two and two together, which takes me a while to do sometimes, that this was a track. So tell me a little bit about how you two got connected to Zach.
I can go back about a year ago. Sean and I were doing a performance of Rent together at the Children's Theater, and John Lynn, who couldn't be here today, who also played piano on the track. He was the music director for that show, and we hit it off pretty well, and definitely wanted to do some type of project in the future together. At the time, we didn't know what that was going to be. Fast forward to about November, I happened to run into John just by chance out shopping one day, and he's like, "Hey, I was just gonna get in touch with you guys about, you know, doing this kid who has cancer. He wants to do like a song of his in a studio. I wonder if you guys want to play on it."
And you heard about him prior to that? Just said this was not. You heard about him? Did you know anything about it?
Or no,
just a good cause that you'd kind of thought it'd be a cool thing to do.
The way it was presented to us was almost like a Make-A-Wish Foundation kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, this seems like the right thing to do. Do you want to do it?
Yeah, and like we had no idea who Zach was or anything, but our gut instinct is like, yes, of course, this would be something we want to be a part of. And so the day recording came about, and it was at Atomic K Studios in Minneapolis, and so we show up, got to meet Zach and his family for the first time, and so kind of we're able to at least put like a face to the, you know, the sound. We had been given like a very, you know, rough demo version of the song, mm-hmm. you know, a few days ahead of time to kind of get prepared and whatever. And so, yeah, it was definitely a lot of, you know, kind of emotional things happening at once, just kind of meet him and hear his story and, like, you know, actually, yeah, meet him in person. So, and it was, I don't know.
So how does Zach get connected with John?
Zach did a story through KS95 with a Kids Cancer Foundation.
Sure.
I don't know the exact name of
okay.
it, but the president of KS95 heard him play this demo in his radio station and went, "Wow, this kid's got a lot of talent." They do these stories for kids who are dying of the particular cancer that he's got, osteosarcoma, and they always put music to everybody's story, and they were like, "Wouldn't it be so cool if Zach could write his own song for his own story?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so the president of the radio station called up John, and they were friends from past experience, and the president had said, "You know, can you get some studio time and get a band together to help this kid out?" And John was like, "Oh, totally, I can totally do that." And then kind of like bat phoned us to be like, "Hey, here's the demo, can you guys be ready in like a, you know, 2 days?" And we're like, "Yeah, totally." You know,
I mean, could you, when John asked you this, could you tell there was some, a little bit of a passion, a little bit of urgency behind this? Versus, I mean, you've been playing music most of your lives. I'm sure you get tons of requests, like, "Hey, I got this song, I want you to play a track on, or you need some help on." I mean, what was there something about this the story that really compelled you to like, "I want to do be part of this, I want to do it"?
I mean, it was very unique in the fact that, yeah, he was, you know, writing this song for his own situation, which I've never really heard of that before. And I guess I was under the impression that this was just going to be for his family, for him, just for his friends, you know, and like just kind of a keepsake mm-hmm. type thing. Like, really had no idea.
Yeah. Nothing was ever said the entire time, you know, in presenting the actual situation that meant that we were going to go number one on iTunes or that this was going to be a huge success or anything like that. It really felt like it was a deeply personal thing. There was, you know, you listen to the song and it really sounds like he's talking to his girlfriend the whole time. So,
and let's look at the credits and personnel. Zach Zobiak, guitar and lead vocals. Carl Demmer, producer, mix engineer. Merritt Benton, track and engineer. John Lynn, piano. Zach Miller, drums, and then Sean O'Hay, our guest today, bass, and then Matt Vanelli, guitar. The song was released digitally December 14, 2012. In the U.S., Cloud sold 25,000 units before Sobiek's passing and an additional 30,000 units on his death date. In total, 156,000 copies of Cloud's upon his Hot 100 entry and has since accumulated 6 million hits on YouTube. It was never promoted by a major label. It received minimal airplay in the top Hot 100. It's a pretty amazing story from coming from East River City, St. Paul with this rare form of cancer to this nationwide, if not worldwide, momentum.
And I guess, you know, given the, you know, musically, statistical, whatever you want to look at, you know, like the charts or whatever, and it's like, I guess it's kind of comforting to know that some kid who's not with like any sort of label can all of a sudden one day have a song that's on top of like Justin Timberlake and like Daft Punk. It's like, that's so, it's kind of inspirational to think about, you know, I mean, yeah. aside from the, you know, kind of tragic implication that it came from, but at the same time, it is very, you know, uplifting to know that too.
I mean, if I were to take my soul out of it and look at it from a purely business standpoint, it's a real good pick me up kind of song, and it hit right in the holidays too. So mm-hmm. Not that he had anything to do with it, but the timing really couldn't have been any better. And
some things, I guess, are meant to happen when they happen.
Yeah, I mean, the stars really aligned for him on that. So
the song really is phenomenal. But do you think it ever could have gotten as big as it was if it didn't have that story behind it, that incredibly personal touch?
That's a really good question.
Can this be manufactured, or is this got to come from your soul?
You look at the YouTube video and it's just a normal song, and then the actual video itself, the one with the millions of views, it tells a story of like what the song is actually about. And every time that more words come up on it to give you the next, you know, two sentences of the story, every time that you see it, you just get a little more choked up. And by the time that you're six or seven sentences into it, you're just like, oh my God, we're going to buy this.
You completely understand what's happening.
Yeah. And like, we had no idea. We really had no idea. You know, we knew that he was in a really tight spot, and we knew that the song was important to him. We went and recorded it, and, you know, we all took the days off of work to go in and do it. And at the end of it, we're like, hey, good luck, kid. Like, I don't know if I'm ever going to see you again or anything like that, because the way that it was presented to us was that this guy's in really bad shape, and he wants to do this, and this is important to him, and he's got some powerful friends who really want to get this done. So when we did it, we had no intention of it ever going anywhere, which is I think that's the crazy story of it all, is how big it got, because we didn't know. Mm-hmm. The whole time when we were recording it, there was a guy with a camera who is, you know, shooting the video, obviously, but I didn't think that he was shooting a music video that was going on iTunes, and he never said what he was doing. It was like, well, this is for this cancer foundation, and you know, they tell these stories here, and it's for these kids who are sick, and so they can, you know, inspire each other, keep each other going, so you don't really think of it.
Question I wanted to ask before we even did this, and it's something I thought of for a few days when I knew we were gonna have this conversation, is I've seen both of you record and perform live in different various groups and events. You're performing now in a much more highly emotional situation right now. In fact, the person that is driving this direction is with you, and you know that he's suffering, and this is his, you know, heart and soul you're playing here artistically. Tell me a little about the difference in recording a song like this than when you've done it just for yourself or things you've written, or if you're trying to, you know, performing live. Tell me a little bit about how that is.
Well, I would say, I mean, it was interesting because he had some family members there, and there was like an audience watching us record this, which I'm not sure how interesting the process is, but it seemed like they were, you know, kind of on the edge of their seat for everything, like mm-hmm. every retake, every little thing that was happening. But I mean, it kind of gave you an idea that how important this was to them, and how, you know, like how involved they wanted to be, you know, even from like just watching it, how they wanted to see the whole process from start to finish. And I mean, I got a sense of, you know, just the importance to them that just, you know, recording these separate tracks and whatever were. So I don't know if Sean can maybe explain a little bit more how the actual recording process works.
When we were given the demo, and when we came into the studio, we weren't actually like, when Zach walked into the room, it wasn't like, hey, everybody stand up, Zach's in the room. He just kind of walked in the room, and his mom was there with him behind him, and he had trouble walking because of his illness, and he literally had no idea or concern how he wanted the song to turn out. Mm-hmm. He's like, I have the song, and it's mine, and I just want it to be recorded, and I want it to be recorded by like some good musicians, so that's you. And okay, let's do this. And he was open to every single idea that got put out. He'd never turned anything down until we asked him to sing harmony with himself. And then he was like, no, I don't sing harmony.
He definitely put his foot down there.
Yeah, it was funny because everything else, like, we were like, okay, we're going to do this ripping bass line, and we're going to, how about these drums, and what about this guitar thing and these pianos, and how about this glockenspiel thing? He's like, yeah, that's fine. All right, do you want to sing harmony with yourself just in the chorus, you know, just so it kind of thickens up? It's like, no.
You know, I love the glockenspiel.
That was a last minute. It was literally recorded in the 11th hour of all the recording, and it was a last minute thought by the drummer, whose name is also Zach, who just brought it, had it in a bag the whole time, and said, oh, I have one more thing I want to put on this. Let me do it. You guys can hate it or not. And they recorded it, and I guess from what I heard is that Zach and his family were actually kind of against it. They were, you know, I don't know if we really like this. It's kind of counterintuitive to what we want to do. And the producer, Carl, he really kind of pushed it. Nah, you got to have this glockenspiel. You know, you're going to want this glockenspiel. And then they put it in, and that ended up being kind of the theme to the whole song. So
yeah, it's a stroke of brilliance because that just, you hear those few notes and it sets up everything. You know exactly what you're about to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, it's when you record a song like this, you record it in pieces, and so what happens is you have a demo, and you kind of shoot for an average tempo that you want to go with, and so you say, okay, this is going to be 120 beats per minute, and that's not what the song is. I'm just using numbers here, and so then you make a drum machine click to that, and then Zach goes in with the guitar, and he records a really raw, you know, even with the mistakes, let's just keep it in there so we can play along with it kind of thing on his guitar. We record that, then we start laying down the bass and the drums. Matt comes in with his guitar later. We add the piano. You add the vocals to it, and then finally Zach comes in again and records, like, the actual guitar. So he has to go in a couple of times into the recording studio, and mind you, he can't walk, so he's, like, crutching himself into the studio. So it's kind of neat. You part it out into multiple pieces, and it's up to the recording engineers, Merritt and Carl, who put everything together, and then they kind of decide, okay, this is how we want it to be, and then they present several options to, you know, the owners of the song, Zach and his family, and then they kind of pick and go, okay, that's the one that we want. So there's actually multiple versions out there that we'll never hear because they are lost in the personal archives of wherever.
So it's just so weird to even imagine it without the glockenspiel at the beginning. What's, do you like it without the glockenspiel? Did you like that version at all?
I can't even remember what that sounds like. I mean, like you said, it's, I, you know, just instinctively associate that sound with the song now, where it's like, you know, even if it was the last thing to be added, it was always meant to be there, I guess. So
sure, sure.
So after you guys recorded, how long was the recording session, first of all?
It was at least 5 hours.
Because they had, like, Zach had his guitar, like, acoustic guitar and his vocals. There was drums, glockenspiel, bass guitar, and then my electric guitar.
Yep.
I mean, my part didn't take that long to do. I guess it varied from instrument to instrument. But
yeah.
The vocals are obviously the most important thing, so that takes the most time. But
I think the drums actually took, like, 4 or 5 takes.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to record the bass and the drums at the same time, and I played bass, and so I had to go, like, I'm not being egotistical. Like, I felt like, I felt pretty good about what I played. I just had to play it, like, several dozen times as the drums were kind of sorting out what was going to happen. No disrespect to Zach Miller, who played the drums on it.
You don't make it number one by playing poorly on a track.
No, that's true. Yeah, I mean, he would go through and each individual fill, he was like, how do you feel about that? Did I overplay that? Did I underplay it? How do you feel about this? Like, I can hit this a little harder here. He was very detail-oriented, and that was appreciated, I think, by the family.
Well, and I could be incorrect, and my guest Matt Vanelli and Sean O'Hay from the track Clouds by Zach Sobiech, when you're in bands and you're playing together for months and years on end, it's a challenging experience to even people you play with and know their style to be able to play together. You're playing with people you've never played with professionally, correct, in this track. You knew John, but you did not know...
The rest of the crew, no.
So now go here and make music... Hi, I'm Sean. Hi, I'm Zach. Go do it.
Yeah, it was neat. go ahead.
I mean, it's nothing even personal. I mean, you just like hear what something sounds like and you just kind of go with it, you know. It's like you don't really attach these new people's faces to it. It's just like you hear this thing and you go with it and it just works, you know.
But even from a professional music, you know, music or any kind of art you do, there's a chemistry you have to have in order to make something good. And I just think from when you listen to the song, it sounds like a well-refined band that's playing, and that's what I took from it when I listened to it. I thought that everyone here had known each other. I talked to you guys. I just know you knew John.
Well, let's go with your thought then.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, you know, you make those kind of decisions democratically. You go into it beforehand and you go, hey, Zach, what interests you? And Zach says, I really like such and such and so and so. Okay, cool. We will rearrange things around that style and we'll come up with five different options.
So this was recorded in the spring of 2012?
No, it was November. It doesn't say on anywhere, but for anybody who wants to use it in a trivia quiz, it was November 6, 2012.
And this was at Atomic K. And then did you keep up with Zach since recording it? Were you able to connect with him since the...
After this happened and, like, the video actually came out when it was getting popular, like, he had been performing songs with, I don't remember the name of, what was the name of his band?
Firm Handshake.
Firm Handshake. I know they had been performing shows here and there. I know they did one at the Varsity that was kind of a big deal. And, like, they would do this song amongst others they had. So, I mean... that was like his live band, where this was kind of a different experience, just like his studio experience. But yeah, he would, I would kind of follow him, you know, there would always be video of his shows that he would do because, you know, based on this song, you know, he had quite a big following after that.
Do you think Zach was able to feel some of the success that he created?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he had a carrying bridge too, so you would always see like his mom would keep up. A carrying bridge, if you're not familiar, it's like a...
online journal for...
Yeah, for people who are sick or hospitalized or any reason, and anybody can go there and just like kind of keep up with people. So I would keep up with him that way, but... not feeling like I really had to reach out to the family. They have a lot going on. You know, you have a YouTube video with 6 million views, you're going to have the phone ringing quite a bit. You know, you don't want to show up and be like, hey, I played bass in your kid's song. So, yeah, I try to keep your distance. The really neat thing, though, was at his funeral, we showed up and John, Matt, and I went to the funeral, and we stood in line with everybody else, and we went through... the viewing with everybody else, and when we got actually up to his parents looked at us and said, John, Sean, and Matt, hey, I'm so glad that you guys are here. Like, they totally recognized us and knew our faces and knew us by name and said thank you, and that was really huge, you know. So they met with over 3,000 people that day, and still, like, at the end of the night, we're still able to remember us by face.
That's You can't. I always have challenging saying to people that have had a loss, you know, what do you say to them? Because anything I say, it's insignificant. And yet you want to communicate that you're so deeply sorry. And you had a connection, albeit a brief one, but an important one with Zach. It was obviously, I would assume, a big part of his final year with us. Let's take a break. We'll be back talking more about the song Clouds with Matt Vanelli and Sean O'Hay, who played on the hit track on KLB Flashback Twin Cities.